Jim Ormond is a documentarian and producer of the Local History Channel, and producer and director of short history documentaries for distribution on the web and local television. He's the director of Hudson River Brickmakers, that aired on select PBS stations in 2013, also the director of The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, Washington Irving, American Dreams. And we're very lucky to have Jim on our show talking about brickmaking in the Capital District.
For those of you just tuning in, this is the Sanctuary for Independent Media, 105.3 FM. We have part two of our Reclaiming History segment on brickmaking in the Hudson Valley. And I have on the line Jim Ormond. Jim, thank you so much for joining us.
Sure, I'm happy to be with you.
So listen, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, about the work you've done around brickmaking.
Well, I was somebody who started, I got bit by the video bug, and I like video editing. And like you, I like local history. Mm-hmm. So I produced short documentaries on local history, mainly in the Hudson Valley in New York City. And it's something I enjoy, you know, looking at the old photographs and piecing together the story. And there's a lot of great local history stories out there. And it's something I enjoy doing. It's kind of a niche.
So I know in segment one, we were talking about brickmaking in New York City. And you said then that 10% of all of the, that 10% of the bricks were made to build New York City. Like 10% of all of the bricks?
If you think of 10% throughout the entire United States,
wow,
in a period, that's a lot when you think about Manhattan Island. If you were to look at an aerial satellite of the United States, Manhattan would be a tiny little dot.
Exactly.
10% of all the bricks were used on Manhattan Island. It's really a brick island.
I
should say also that it's Hudson Valley wide, and I think that your listeners in Troy and Albany, there's so many great old buildings there that have been preserved.
Absolutely.
They were all made with Hudson River brick. You know, it's the bricks used in those, a lot of beautiful 19th century buildings in downtown Troy and parts of Albany that were made with, you know, the bricks there were dug from the Hudson, and they supported the local economy, which is important, these little towns up and down the Hudson.
Well, I think about, you know, we have Clinton Avenue in Albany. Like you said, we have a lot of downtown Troy. You know, anything around the Washington Park area, you know, a lot of old historical buildings, like you said, made with brick, a three-story walk-up, maybe a four-story walk-up brick building. And,
right,
you know, I used to live in the South, and coming up to Albany to spend time with my maternal side, my grandmother's house, pulling up in front of her house and seeing that three-story brick walk-up just let me know that I was back in New York and back in Albany.
Right. And it's beautiful architecture, you know, what they came up with and the creativity and how they used the bricks. And it's a wonderful... So the last brickyard in the Hudson closed in 2002, but the legacy of it is with us every day, every time we walk outside our houses or up and down those streets. And there's a story behind all those beautiful buildings. They were, you know, the bricks were handmade and dug in the Hudson and in these little local towns between Albany and down to Ossining and Rockland County. So both sides of the river. It's a legacy.
Queeman is the one I always think of, P&M. Brickyard, where they...
Right, Howell and Minnick. That was the last surviving.
Really?
That was the last surviving brickyard, which closed in 2002. But, you know, never say never. Maybe a brickyard will open again someday.
Well, I mean, I have friends that live out in Voorheesville, and, you know, I had one friend, she has a home in Voorheesville, which is a little bit west of Albany, and she talks about going out in the backyard and digging, you know, to plant like a garden and finding all of these bricks. And she found so many bricks that she was able to make a brick path from the backyard all the way to the end of the property and built like a little brick, you know, grill because of all these bricks that were like buried underneath the ground. And she was scratching her head going, I don't know where all these bricks came from, but, it was great to have them. And imagining if she had to pay for each of those bricks today, how much it would cost her. And they were just underneath the dirt.
Well, one of the interesting things in the documentary, I met two collectors, Andy Vanderpoel and Fred Rieck, and they go out on their canoe and they go up and down the Hudson, the east and western side, and they look for the sites of the old brickyards, and they collect the bricks from these yards. Some of them may have, some of the yards may have vanished 100 years ago, but the bricks are still there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, they have a very interesting collection where you can, you know, this yard was active in 1908 or 1912, 1916. And what happened was the brickyards were all along the river because that's where the clay was and the easy transportation to the city. And the real estate is valuable, so it's hard to find some of the remnants of those brickyards. But the bricks are still there, and it's interesting how these collectors look at old maps and they're local history detectives, and they find the bricks up and down the Hudson. It's great.
So how many brickyards do you estimate there were between New York and, let's say, Albany?
Well, in the life of the industry, maybe 130.
130 brickyards.
Right.
And
sometimes they were just a family brickyard. You'll see a name, it could be just a small. They're all different scales. I featured Roseton in the documentary that's near Newburgh,
mm-hmm.
and that was a very big operation. In fact, it was what you might call a company town because they had, a library for the workers. But it was seasonable. It was seasonal work until, the 40s and 50s, it went indoors and more machine and more automation. It sort of changed the nature of the industry from what it was in the 19th century.
Now, right now, I know that if you want to build a brick house, it will cost you a fortune, if you from foundation up to the roof, if you want to build a brick house. And there's all this reclaiming of old bricks and old timber, flooring. There's just a bustling industry of reclaiming old building products. And bricks is one of those things. And there are people that just sell antique bricks.
Right. The bricks you would buy today at your local hardware store are extruded. So they come out, it's almost like a toothpaste, and the machine does all the work. As part of this documentary, I didn't put it so much in this documentary, but I did go to a modern brick-making factory outside of Hartford, Connecticut. And what's amazing is you have four men, where in the 19th century you had, hundreds. And the four men are just really kind of, operating the machinery and just making sure everything goes okay. The machinery is doing all the work now, so it's kind of the magic of automation.
And during
the
night,
people find in their backyard were all hand molded. These are those kind of chunky bricks that have what's called a frog. That's the family or the company name on them. And there's different ones, obviously.
And what is it called? A frog?
It's called a frog, yeah. I don't know what that came from, but that's where that name came from. But that's what the collectors look for,
So, that's one of those game show questions that no one will know the answer to unless they've watched your documentary. The frog on the brick is the name. It's like the branding of the brickyard, right?
Right. Well, another thing is it's kind of a humorous thing, but when you hear the expression, there's the clinker. Mm-hmm. They said that the old brickmakers who would work the kilns could sort of tell if the brick was fired well by the sound of it. So they would clink the bricks together. So that's how that expression got into our, everyday language.
Oh, wow. I like it. I'm a history buff, so I love it.
If you're ever on a game show.
I could win $1 million.
Right.
For those of you just tuning in, you're listening to another segment of Reclaiming History. We're talking about brickmaking with Jim Orman. He did a documentary on brickmaking in the Hudson Valley. So we're very excited and honored to have him on with us today. Jim, tell our listeners where they can tune in to see your documentary and give us a little bit on any other projects you're working on.
I have a YouTube channel, and it's called the Local History Channel. So if somebody is interested, they go on YouTube, and in the search bar, they just type in Hudson River Brickmakers. That's the name of the documentary. It'll pop up. Or my website is localhistorychannel.com, and there's a way to my YouTube channel from there as well. And it'll talk about, you know, some of my other projects. This summer I'm working on a project about exhibition baseball in the 1920s.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping to have that done soon.
Well, I wish you luck on that. You know, I know when you're starting a project, it's night and day working, trying to finish it. And I commend you for your documentary on brickmaking. I was very lucky to stumble upon it on YouTube, so I was glad to have you on the show. I wanted to ask you one question. In segment one, you were talking about the Italians that came in to work in the brick factory, and you also mentioned that there were African Americans working in the brickyards. Was that a common sight to see African Americans or other ethnic groups working in brickyards?
Yes, it was. A lot of the African Americans came up from the South because, again, this was when New York City's building started to boom. There was huge demand for brickmaking, and you had, you know, so immigrants, you know, could get work, and African Americans who were looking for work down South would also get work as well. And what's interesting is that the legacy continues because African Americans came in the Beacon area, especially. Many African Americans who live in Beacon today came up because their great grandparents or great great grandparents came up from Virginia or North Carolina to work in the brickyards in Beacon. And the Italian immigrants have a strong presence in Kingston.
Mm-hmm.
The yards were never, you know, one thing or all another, but there was Irish in certain areas where it was, and then Italians in certain areas. Newburgh area, Roseton, had a strong Hungarian population. So,
mm-hmm.
And when I go and give this talk or show these documentaries, I meet people who either their family owned a brickyard or their great-great-grandfather worked in the brickyard, and they tell me about it.
Well, you know, you talked about the modern way in which we make bricks now, equivalent to a toothpaste tube of brick coming out and being pressed by a machine. Do you think, even though brickmaking was a laborer's kind of a job, do you think it required a certain level of skill to hand mold a brick?
Well, I think that people, you know, the other thing about having a frog was that you took pride in your brickmaking, and the contractors would say these are good bricks, or, you know, you would get a reputation from, you know, the strength and quality of your bricks. But I just think that it's, to think about the process of the way bricks were made, where they were hand-molded, they were put out in the sun for 2 weeks to dry before they were fired in the kiln for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
It's really amazing to think of those buildings and all the hand labor that went into making those bricks.
That's right.
All those 19th-century buildings you see in Troy or Albany or Brooklyn, it's the legacy that is... past, you know, the last brickyard on the Hudson has closed, but the buildings are still with us, and so the story is still there.
So a lot of people are buying antique bricks. Do you think the bricks from that period are better than the new bricks that are being produced now?
I don't know. That's hard to say. I know that, you know, now with science, one of the things I put in the documentary was that what happened, one of the things that happened, and I got this from, you know, one of the local books, a book called The Great Hudson River Brick Industry by George Hutton. What happened was bricks from the Hudson Valley, the clay was found to be a little more porous than
mm-hmm.
from other regions.
Mm-hmm.
And for that reason, the water could get in there, and ice, and some of the government agencies that were regulating the material standards said that you needed to add shale to the mix for a Hudson Valley brick to give it, you know, the strength and quality of clay from other areas. And that became difficult because there was not as naturally occurring shale in the Hudson Valley So today's bricks, there's probably a little more science involved, which probably makes them stronger. But there's just a very nice quality to those old hand-molded bricks. And the dimensions seem larger to me. I didn't measure, you know, an extruded brick. That's right. What you get at Home Depot.
Well, I tell you, I like something about the fact that the bricks were made by hand and knowing that some man primarily handled that brick with his own hands and put his frog on it.
Right.
And Jim, we just want to thank you so much from the Sanctuary for Independent Media 105.3. We want to thank you so much for coming on the show and talking to us about brick making in the Hudson Valley. Thank you for joining us.
Sure. It's been my pleasure, Livonia, and I think you're doing great things.